Hello, and welcome to this podcast in which we will discuss the latest political developments in Libya. I'm Gala Riani, Director of Analysis for the Middle East and North Africa here at Control Risks. In recent weeks, we've seen a number of notable political developments in Libya. A government of national accord has established itself in the capital, Tripoli, following a UN-led political process. And we're also seeing some movement on a military confrontation of the Islamic State and the stronghold of Sirte. Joining me to discuss these latest developments are Fiona Barsoom, our Associate Analyst for North Africa, and Simran Singh, our Senior Operations Manager for Africa, who's recently returned from a visit to Libya. Welcome both. Fiona, let's start with you first. Can you give us an update on the political situation and where we are with the implementation of the UN political process? What is the outlook for political stability and for the fight against the Islamic State?
The installation of the GNA in the Government of National Accord in Tripoli has in some ways changed the political dynamics that we've seen in Libya since mid to late 2014. We previously had two competing authorities in Libya, a legislature based in Tripoli, the General National Congress, and an associated government, and a second legislature based in the eastern city of Tobruk, the House of Representatives, also with an associated government. The move of the GNA, the Government of National Accord, to Tripoli has now resulted in Libya having three authorities. Nevertheless, the installation of the Government of National Accord has been seen as a positive step by the international community as a way towards uniting Libya's warring factions. It has made some progress towards consolidating its authority, having the support of some important armed groups in Tripoli and Misrata, and perhaps more significantly, the support of the Tripoli-based Central Bank of Libya and the National Oil Corporation, which will enable it to control Libya's finances.
So what are some of the key challenges that the GNA faces?
The GNA's authority remains in many ways precarious. There continues to be opposition from the rival legislatures based in Tobruk and the General National Congress based in Tripoli, or of members of those two bodies. Under the political agreement brokered by the United Nations, the Government of National Accord needs to be voted into being by the House of Representatives. This body has consistently failed to gather in order to conduct that vote and to vote to amend Libya's constitutional declaration to include the UN brokered agreement. This continues to trouble the legitimacy of the Government of National Accord and means that the House of Representatives and its allied armed forces continue to be a rival authority to the Government of National Accord. Though around 100 members of the House of Representatives have declared their support for the GNA, this continues to be conditional around questions of military leadership in Libya, particularly the fate of General Khalifa Haftar, who leads the armed forces affiliated with the House of Representatives. He's a very divisive figure, having been leading an offensive against Islamist groups, including militant groups and more moderate groups, in eastern Libya since 2014.
Right, so sort of the role of General Haftar and where he's going to be positioned is going to have a really important impact on where the political process goes. Let me just go to Simran now. Simran, you've recently visited Misrata and Tripoli, and we'll discuss some of the security issues in a minute, but what were your impressions on the ground having just been there?
The impressions on the ground were a significant improvement from previous visits, probably 6 to 8 months ago. Although, obviously, as Fiona's mentioned, there are a number of challenges still to come. There was a marked improvement just on the level of security forces on the ground within Tripoli, and significant presence of police, particularly around where the GNA are situated within Tripoli and the area around that. Travel to Misrata was very similar to previously, in previous years before the most recent unrest, and travel within Misrata itself was manageable with obviously stringent security precautions.
Fiona, we can't really talk about Libya without talking about IS. So can you give us an update about what that situation looks like?
IS has, since the beginning of 2016, really started hitting out more from its stronghold in Sirte, in the center of Libya's northern coast. We've seen attacks against a police training center in Zlitan, numerous attacks against checkpoints and against oil infrastructure to the east of Sirte. The last few weeks, we've actually seen much more of an intent on the part of Libya's various armed factions to try and combat Islamic State. Previously, the strategy appeared much more to be containing the group's expansion. As a result of this, we're likely to see Islamic State attempting to hit out increasingly against those groups, trying to combat it and trying to expel it from Sirte in the surrounding area. We also have groups on various sides of Libya's conflict who are trying to prove themselves to be the most competent military or armed force in Libya, given the international community's real focus on the fight against Islamic State at the moment. This means that we might well see clashes between different groups, different Libyan armed factions, as those groups attempt to move on Sirte and to target Islamic State.
Simran, I can only imagine that Islamic State was on people's minds when you were there. Can you share some of the impressions that you had on the ground?
Certainly. A number of the people on the ground that we spoke to were very aware of the threat. I think the knowledge and acceptance that the threat exists is there now, when perhaps it wasn't previously, when it was probably under the surface. And there's a much broader understanding and acceptance from the people that there is a requirement to deal with that. There are various different opinions, as I'm sure many people have heard, about the different ways that could be achieved. And that then sort of goes back down to the political debates that Fiona's been discussing as to how that might go about. But it's very much something that everybody is aware about at the moment.
Thank you, Simran. And we know that a lot of companies are thinking about returning to Libya now. Can you share a bit of your advice in terms of a practical and operational perspective? What should these companies be thinking about as they plan for their return?
Companies looking to re-enter should be looking at a number of different factors from a security perspective and from a logistical perspective for re-entry. From a security perspective, the situation, whilst in some elements of Tripoli and limited movements is manageable, is still extremely unstable. And the prospect of spikes of significant unrest, which would put personnel at risk on the ground, are likely to continue. To that end, many of the previous policies and procedures in place relating to security should be revisited, reviewed, and then look to be enhanced. And that should include reviews of accommodation where expatriates are due to stay, or it should include reviews of offices and their workplaces, sites that should be used, and should also be a renewal of security and evacuation plans. The other sort of challenge for companies returning back is purely logistical. Matiga Airport is operational and runs commercial flights to Istanbul and other North African countries, while there is also a charter flight option going to Malta. None of these options are particularly reliable, but do allow for transit in and out. But that concern is there, is that Matiga is the only option at the moment available for international transfer.
And Fiona, if I can pose the same question to you, but from a political risk perspective, what should our clients, companies be thinking about?
The enhanced security procedures that Simran was talking about, companies should really be aware that this is not going to be a short-term issue in Libya. Even if we start to move forward with the implementation of the political agreement, the time that it's going to take for authorities to build up unified and competent armed forces and security forces mean that we're really talking long-term security issues in Libya, and companies should be aware of that when they're thinking of going back in. Some of the more difficult aspects of the Libyan business environment that we saw even prior to 2011 are still going to trouble companies, although they are largely manageable. For example, slow and difficult bureaucratic procedures and corruption. We've also seen non-payment risks increasing due to low oil production really having a negative effect on the Libyan economy and central bank reserves being used to fund the growing deficit. In terms of new risks following the conflict, the real changes in Libya's political environment and stakeholders mean that companies who are thinking of re-entering really need to make sure that they know where their partners stand in the new Libyan political landscape, both in terms of their connections and the services that, that they can provide, but also in terms of potential reputational risks due to links to, for example, armed groups during the conflict. There are also increased operational risks, for example, power cuts and other damaged infrastructure. And that damaged infrastructure is something that is going to particularly affect the oil and gas industry in Libya over the coming few years.
Fiona, Simran, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. This is obviously an issue that we're going to be coming back to very much regularly over the coming weeks and months. I'm Gala Riani. Thank you very much for listening to this Control Risk podcast on Libya. We look forward to being with you again very soon.